I want to continue our series, Questions and Hope. Last time we talked about aging. And tonight I want us to think for a few moments about God's light in our darkness. In particular, thinking about ways that sometimes the world might seem filled with darkness around us, or perhaps things happen in our lives that kind of lock us in somewhat to darkness. There's a story relayed here by Bill Tuck. Said several decades ago, Clarence Hall, the late editor of Reader's Digest, went to Israel for an Easter sunrise service of worship. He was unable to sleep, and the night grew long for him. You ever had those long nights where you just can't sleep and you don't? You look at the clock, and then you look back over, you think, oh, it's got to be at least an hour later, and it's been 3 minutes. He became quarrelsome with his Christian Arab guide. You know, that sometimes happens when we lose sleep and we're anticipating something. He got quarrelsome and asked if the night would ever end so he could go to the garden tomb for the service. Never fear, my friend, Abdul, his guide, responded. The day will come. You can't hold back the dawn. Which I think, when I read that story, I think that's really a good thing for us to remember in our lives, especially when times of darkness or difficulty or despondency come, which really kind of is a very Judeo-Christian approach. We as Christians talk about the darkness of the tomb and of crucifixion, and yet just before dawn on that Easter Sunday morning that we celebrate, the women went to the tomb. And there they discovered that good news of resurrection and resurrected life. The dawn was indeed a great time for them. But if you go all the way back, can you think about some place further back in the Bible where there's a lot of emphasis on darkness and then there is dawn? I started to say it another way, but then... Okay, well, after the flood, the clouds are gone, the rain's gone, the water that was under the earth. We oftentimes think it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, but the text says that the great fountains of the deep burst forth too. And so you had water coming down and water coming up and darkness, and there was light. But I'm thinking even before that. Yes, Robert. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was moving over the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light in the darkness. And God separated the light from the darkness. And the light he called day, and the darkness he called night. And God looked and saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning one day. Evening and morning. The order of the Jewish day recognizes that, kind of as Abdul said here, you can't hold back the dawn. Whenever there's darkness, there is dawn. There is light there somewhere. An anticipation, an expectation, a sense of hope. Whenever there's darkness, there is light. And the whole order of the Jewish day. The day begins at sundown and ends the following sundown. And actually, it begins between... y'all do realize, I think I've said before, there are actually two evenings. There are two sundowns. And the lambs were to be slaughtered between the evenings. Well, what does that mean? The first evening is when the sun touches the horizon, and the second evening is when the sun disappears below the horizon. But then there's darkness, and then there's the day, the dawn. And Sabbath begins at the time of darkness with the recognition that the good news out there is that there will be dawn and there will be light. Most people today would agree that our world has a lot of darkness in it, right? And you don't even have to just turn on the news. Sometimes all you got to do is look down the street or go climb up and look over the fence from one yard to another. But our world has a lot of darkness in it. Doomsday prophets tell us the end is near because there is so much darkness and so much destructiveness that takes place. And yet, I would contend that there's always been darkness and destructiveness in the world. With our instant news and instant coffee and instant this and... that reminds me. Hey, William's not here. I forgot to put this on vibrate. He might call, right? But you got, and I don't know how it works, but on these things, on your computers, you got instant messenger. I mean, I'm enough of a dinosaur to where I was talking on the phone with somebody earlier today, and they asked for a phone number, and I said, well, I'm going to have to hang up, look it up, and call you back, because I don't know how to put it on hold, find it, and do that kind of stuff, you know? Now, my 5.5-year-old granddaughter can do that, but I can't, right? And the way David and Kristen are so tech-savvy, Quinn's liable to come out with an iPhone in her hand. there are evidences around us. What are some of the evidences of the darkness that we see in our world, or maybe even in our own life? Do what? National debt?
And I think that's the sign of the whole thing. We've just lost control. About when I was born in the 1970s, we had a lot of people
trying to appease everybody. Well, national debt. Other signs of that you see of darkness.
Like I said, that kind of leads to everything when you think about it. Law enforcement, kind of scripted it used to be, you got to get away with anything. Criminals can steal millions of dollars and only have to give back so much to go to jail. Crime pays.
I mean, even to the point you wouldn't believe, and I still look every now and then, but a few years ago I had this pet peeve going on because I would sit in traffic and I would see all of these license tags that had expired, some of them 14, 15 months earlier, and see an officer sitting right there in line behind them and they didn't even pull them over. I'm thinking, what? I go pay my taxes, but other things. If you're going to fly to Sochi, what can you not do now because of all the sense of darkness in the world? Can't even take toothpaste with you. You got to buy the Russian toothpaste. Right? Or bottled waters. You know, all kinds of things that you can't do. Why? Because somebody might take and put a plastic explosive in a toothpaste tube and detonate it. Identity theft. Absolutely. Absolutely. Anything else? Young adults without direction. Or retired police officers in movie theaters that shoot somebody because they're texting their daughter. Your phone didn't... How many times you checked your phone to make sure it was on vibrate and wouldn't go off? Okay. Right. And yet, right. Well, as I've said, and I was talking to somebody the other day, and they said something about all that kind of stuff. And I said, well, you know, the first murder was probably done with a rock. That rock's probably in somebody's garden somewhere in the world, so I guess now we need to ban all rocks. Hammers, screwdrivers, chainsaws. Well, that'd cut down on the population. Yeah. Are the things which trap people in darkness from which they seem unable to escape? Yeah. Right. Look at that. Many, yes. Yeah. Yeah, Wesley. Yeah. Other things which seem to trap people. You got sickness. Right. We are, yeah, we're slaves to all kinds of things, and not just African Americans being slaves to all kinds of things. Right. 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 And Irish. Ireland? No.
There are
all kinds
of
people, not just right. I was reading an article in Time magazine the other day while I finally, after 2 years of babying it and epoxying and Gorilla Glue in the door handle on the driver's side of my car, and in 6 months of just grabbing the edge and sticking these fingers under it and opening, I finally bought a door handle the other day. And well, it was $85 and cost me $50 to have it put on. But but I figured, then I got to thinking that was probably pretty cheap. But while I was sitting there and they were doing that, as they changed the oil on my 2000 Camry with 288,000 plus on it, still get 29 miles to the gallon, though. I mean, that's... No, but Brent told me if I can get up to 400,000, I might be able to parlay that into a new Camry from the Camry place. Oh, I know. Yeah, but he's got a Honda. But anyway, I was reading in Time magazine. You mentioned it. I digress. I was reading in Time magazine an article by an Indian American, as she called herself, but reacting to some new book that's been written by an author that did Tiger Mom and this kind of thing, talking about discrimination and how certain ethnic groups seem to be more driven than Caucasian American children to excel and all this kind of stuff. And this woman, who is a doctor and a lawyer, was taking exception with that kind of thing, you know, and said, you know, and said, actually, when we go back to visit family in India, we're the ones that are discriminated against by them because we've kind of made it, kind of thing. And so, you know, I just thought that was interesting. But there are all kinds of ways that happens. You're right. And we're slaves to all kinds of things. Anybody in here care to admit that the first thing you do when you get up out of bed in the morning is check this thing for messages? I know a lot of people. Yeah, well, I know a lot of people that do. First thing they do, and I'm not just talking about teenagers either. I know other folks that first thing they do is pick up that cell phone and check it. Okay. So we do, but we do get trapped by a number of things. Are the things in life that paralyze us? Fear of sickness. Fear of other things. You know, darkness has been present in the world since the beginning. In the beginning, there was darkness. But more so since the first sin, right? The first sin was the sin of disobedience. And that led to difficulties. It led to death. I mean, death of the animals that had to provide animal skins for the clothes. Because I still hadn't figured out a way to get the skin off the animal without killing it. But the Bible says that God made clothes of animal skins for them. It caused death of that ideal relationship between the man and woman, didn't it? Because what did they do? Ate off that tree, didn't you? Well, this woman that you gave to me, how do you think she felt? Well, she turned around and said, this serpent over here. And then what happens later when the two sons grow up? Cain kills Abel. Darkness splits families, splits all kinds of relationships. Damages the relationship we have between ourselves and God, and oftentimes between each other. In fact, sometimes darkness, there's some folks that are kind of like, was it Snuffy Smith that had the, there was always a cloud over one guy's head? Okay, Little Abner. Well, I know Snuffy Smith sometimes got struck by lightning, but, I remember, and Pigpen and Peanuts always had a cloud of dirt around him. Yeah. But there are people that always seem to have that kind of stuff going on around them. They almost seem to live in darkness. But the writer of the Gospel of John does recognize there is darkness in the world. I mention it here from John, the Gospel of John, chapter 1, verses 1 through 5. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through Him, and without Him not one thing came into being. What has come into being, or what has been made in Him, was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. The writer of the Gospel of John recognized that life is filled with darknesses. I don't know if that's a real word or not. When I typed it, I got this little red line under the word. But, yeah. But, he recognized that there is darkness in the world. Not just there was darkness, but there is darkness in the world. But he was also confident that the light of God and the light from God cannot be extinguished by the darkness. Now, there are times that we wonder, right? I just caught a little blurb on the news today about somebody going into a church somewhere in Russia and trying to kill some nuns and all that kind of kill. Right. A nun and a parishioner. And we don't even have to go there. Just in the last couple of years, there have been many instances in the United States where somebody... that's why I'm counting on some of you ladies with your purses now. But where somebody comes in to a church and just starts randomly firing or doing other things. There is darkness. And even when we think sometimes we're safe from it, there is darkness in the world. But the good news that the writer of the Gospel of John understands and indicates is that just as there was darkness in the beginning and God brought good and light and order, so in Jesus, God is present, bringing good and light and order. Jesus was rejected by his own people. What kind of a darkness is that? And yet in that, God brings light. And God is present to bring light to us in our darkness. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. The Word was eternal. In the beginning was the Word. And by that Word, we're not talking about biblical text. We're talking about Jesus, the Word, the divine Logos of God. He was personal. The Word was with God. The Word was not an impersonal thing. But personal, was and is personal. And is divine. The Word was God. He was in the beginning. Notice it doesn't say he became, but he already was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. By the way, some manuscripts say here, that which has been made was life in him. Yes, Susan? Logos. Logos, depending on the philosophy or religious system, logos means word, it means rationality. The Gnostics saw the divine logos, this Gnostic redeemer, as being rational, the universe as being rational. The logos, and Stoics saw it the same way. It was that which was rational as opposed to irrationality, that which gave order to the universe. Within Gnostic tradition, the logos was a rational, created being, though, kind of a semi-god that would come to teach people knowledge, and in particular, self-knowledge. But deep down inside, they were a piece of God, a spark from God that had broken off, and that therefore, when they realized that, when they died, that spark from God would be released from the prison of the human body and go back to make God more complete. Sounds real New Age. It's just old age. A lot of New Age stuff is old age stuff. Redone. The word for the Gnostics, the word was not the spark. The word was a redeemer.
In the beginning was Jesus.
Well, when you start looking at the Greek text and you start looking at what John is trying to indicate here, for John, the divine logos is Jesus, who is God is one, but Jesus as Son is the divine word that creates, was present in creation, is part of the Godhead, and yet came in Jesus. Right.
So I've had people argue, so are we all sons of God? Jesus is not special.
No.
We all are what he was. I mean, I'm not saying I say that.
No.
I'm saying,
oh, I know.
You
those,
read that.
Yeah, there are those arguments. And in 1 John, in fact, we've talked about this just this past week in our Bible study, 1 John. There is the writer of the Gospel of John, the writer of 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, if he's the one that wrote Revelation, still the same, never calls us sons or daughters of God. We are children of God, but we're not sons and daughters. We're not begotten. Begotten means to be of the same substance, as opposed to children don't necessarily have to be of the same substance. They can be adoptive, etc. And so what the writer of the Gospel of John is saying here and throughout the Gospel of John and the writer of 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John says, Jesus is the only, the unique begotten Son. He's of the same substance as the Father. We are, if we believe, we are children of God, but not of the same substance. We have a spiritual capacity, which God places within us. We have that breath of God within us, which connects us, but we are not sons and daughters because we're not of the same substance of God. So, and that really, that was a major in the Nicene and Chalcedonian councils. Those were major discussions that took place, especially the Nicene Council. About what does it mean? Are we the same substance or not? Or how is Jesus unique? And they talk about the begotten. And that's what the Gospel of John's writer is indicating here. Jesus is the begotten Son. And in John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only, the monogene, only begotten. None. And none of us are born of the same substance as God. You know, and we talked the other day, too, that if we are born naturally from our parents and we contain some of the same DNA as our parents do. So we're begotten. We contain some of the same substance as our parents, our natural parents. And if for us that's the same, we do. And when it's talking about that in Galatians, there is no male or female, slave nor free. It's talking about distinctions. In Christ, there are not distinctions between, oh, well, you're a female, therefore you're inferior or superior. You're male, you're inferior or superior. We're all one. That is, Christ gives us the same. He levels the playing field. As opposed to here, the writer of the Gospel of John, when he's talking about the Word coming into the darkness and creating life, that Word is of the same substance as God. That Word is present with God. That Word is God. Right. It's genderless, but it's also to distinguish between the only begotten of the same substance and we who are not begotten of the same substance. Now, the Gnostics, on the other hand, saw Logos. And what the writer of the Gospel of John did here, because Gnosticism, there were Gnostic Christian churches, Gnosticism was rampant, pretty rampant during this period, was to use language that would be familiar with them. But for them, the Logos, the divine Logos, brought knowledge, but was a semi-god or demigod and would never be in the flesh. The Gnostic Redeemer, when he came, looked like a person, but was really a ghost, a spirit man. You couldn't kill him. He didn't leave footprints. He didn't get hungry. He didn't need food. Didn't get tired. All that kind of stuff. And flesh couldn't kill him. And he was coming to tell everybody at different points in time to lead people into knowledge, and in particular into self-knowledge, to realize that they and God were really the same deep down inside, so that they could go back to make God more complete instead of God completing us. And so he uses that language and he hooks them in and says, oh, this sounds familiar. And then all of a sudden, he drops the other shoe. And guess what? He came to us in flesh. And they would, that'd be like you're going down the road 60 miles an hour and all of a sudden you throw it in reverse and pop the clutch for them. So he does use that. But he does talk here about the uniqueness of Jesus as that divine word. The light shines in the darkness. The darkness has not overcome it. That is, evil and suffering, which is in conflict with God, has not and will not overcome it. But then we get, you go further down, as you said in verse 12, but he allows us to become children of God, which is extra special because he is the monogenes. He is the only one, the uniquely one son, who is of the same substance as the Father. And you can read about the Nicene Council, and it's a whole lot more than what I just said, but. And a lot of different arguments back and forth. And sometimes I was rereading some of the early church fathers just recently. And I thought, I need to get a more modern translation of this because this one was done back when they used thee and thou and that kind of stuff. And so I'm trying to transliterate. Okay, this is you and yours. And but they wrestled with these much more than we do. They really wrestled, and part of the darkness against which they were fighting, and part of the darkness that the early church found itself embroiled in, was this whole philosophical, pantheistic world out here with all these different competing philosophies. And how is Jesus different from, for example, Dionysus? Dionysus was a dying and rising god. But Dionysus dying and rising was tied annually to the cycles of the seasons of the year. And so, how do they distinguish between this? And so, a lot of times what the writers would do, and as I said, part of that darkness was trying to establish just who Jesus is and what God is and was doing in Jesus and can do, uniquely different from Dionysus or Apollo or anybody else. And a lot of times they had to adopt, we talk past each other sometimes. They adopted the language of the ones with whom they were debating and then nuanced that language in different ways to say, but really this is what we're talking about, how it was accomplished. And that's why when we talk about the divine Logos here, coming and that light coming in the darkness, John is using it in a much different way than his Gnostic opponents would do so. To kind of reel them in part of the way and then set the hook. to use a fishing metaphor. We are talking about later about fishermen. It's enough a lot of times to make your head hurt if you think about it too much or read it too much. I've still got a book on my shelf, and y'all are welcome. Anytime you want to, you're welcome to come and borrow it and see if you can get all the way through it. It's this thick in paperback by Hans Kuhn, Does God Exist? And Kuhn is a typical German theologian in the way he writes. I've gotten three-fourths of the way through it a couple of times, but it just makes my head hurt after a while. Yeah, Kuhn's getting up there. He probably doesn't have too many more. Kuhn eventually, long story short, and that would be too, you know, it'd be too late if you were reading it. But long story short, it's a proof of the existence of God. But yes. No. Yeah, there are those who...
Right. I think that's where a lot of people get hung up. I don't have to have it rational.
Well, no, but... And we don't. I think there has to be some... for me, I think there has to be some rationality, but there also has to be the intuitive side, and somehow we have to meld those together. And, you know, I'm one of those, and one of the reasons I keep reading and doing things like I do is... And it may be wrong. One day, I guess, I'll find out. I am utterly amazed and never cease to be amazed by folks who seek, and I know you don't have to get a whole lot of education to be able to connect with folks with the gospel, but folks who, especially these days, seek to lead or pastor, preach, whatever, in churches with as little education as they can when their clientele, their congregation, is getting more and more educated. And a lot of times the language that is used makes no connection with the rest of the folks. So I agree that there has to be some intuitive things here. And yes, you can go through the history books and see all these different speculations as to where this came from and that came from, et cetera. You can do it even in more modern times in the 20th century. There were Baptist missionaries that were told if they took over, if they were able to convert people in certain areas, that they were to take, if the people still had the statues, the statuary and the altars and all, they were to take them in. And Baptists weren't the only one. Roman Catholics were as well. The Pope said go in there and somehow sanitize them and make Christianize them so that they can still see the statue, but they talk about it from a Christian perspective. And so that still goes on. And that bothers me a lot. But yes, I do understand. I agree. It doesn't have to be rational for everybody. That's true. It has to make a connection with you. And I love knowledge, but knowledge simply for the sake of knowledge is just so many words. There has to be some connection. It has to make some difference. And I find, personally, in that and a dollar or whatever gets you a drink in the drink machine. I know they're real questions. And they're questions that I have, too. You know, do I go too far in reading this stuff? But then again, when I put it aside, I have another question and I got to go back. And that's me. But then there are different people that approach it from different, different angles. My father was very, very devout, and it was only later in his life that he started reading more of these things and thinking about more of these things. In part, and I, you know, for better or for worse, I hope he's not suffering for some of the stuff that I might have raised a question on. But there were things where, you know, he had been brought up a certain way and he always thought that way. And then I started, that's the foundation. But have you ever thought about building it this way? And one of those areas was women deacons and women in ministry. My father, no, they can't be. And then he started reading some things, and I started saying, well, read this and point out this and point out that, and then think about it. And he started leading, not a crusade, but started leading toward, at one point, you know, we don't need to cut out women in these leadership roles just because of their gender. And there were women deacons in the early church. And that's just one area. But there were other things. And so, I don't know. And maybe sometimes I think you can go too far in the rationality part. But there's some people who don't want to think at all and just feel. And then there's some of us that want to think a lot, but try to find that balance in between. And that's a lot of the difficulty in living. And that's the journey. You know, we're each on a journey, and our journeys are different. Sometimes they're gravely different or greatly different. Sometimes they're just minor differences. But then again, we are individual persons with our own quirks and those kinds of things. But in all of that stuff, and sometimes that stuff, sometimes those books hurt my head, and I wonder, you know, maybe that's some of the darkness too. But in all of that, Jesus is present to make us alive, to meet us with life, and to meet us with light, if we really believe He's who we say He is. Sometimes that stuff's like the elephant in the dark room and trying to, and you only got your hands on one part and trying to describe what it's like. And I used to tell students all the time, in fact, I had a student in World Religions one time, brilliant. She's the one that I think I've shared with y'all at one point in time, said that one day I'm going to get all the way back to the beginning. And I'm going to be there and I'm going to show you. Science is it. I'm going to show you scientifically. Because I had given the example of the dominoes, and somebody's got to turn over the first domino or the pattern doesn't work. It doesn't happen. And I said, well, that's great. I said, and I hope I'm there. She said, really? Well, why would you want to be there? I said, because then I'm going to say, okay, now tell me, who knocked over the first domino? She looked at me. I said, and then who set the dominoes up to begin with? And I had used this phrase a good bit, and she said, you're about to say, sometimes you just got to live with the mystery, aren't you? And I just smiled. But, you know, we have all of these things sometimes that block our lives. And the hope here is, we have the questions, the hope is that God will shine that light in and through Jesus and sometimes in and through other people around us, to help us find our way in the darkness to that which He would have us to do. And I've digressed a little much and run over a few minutes. So the question here is, what stones are there that maybe lock us in? And this comes out of the idea that the stone was removed and Jesus came out to shed more light, came out of the darkness to shed more light in the world. Well, sometimes we get locked into tombs, don't we? Our rationality can lock us into a tomb. Our feelings only can sometimes seem like we're lost in the darkness or in a tomb. Or then we find other areas. We worry about sickness and human frailty and making mistakes. And so we are paralyzed and afraid because we feel like we're in the darkness. And what move do I make? And so next week, we'll finish this, maybe. Next week, I want us to talk some about what are some of the stones that block lives and keep us in the darkness. And some of those here are an unauthentic life, human weakness and frailty, emotional difficulties, some are listed there, a need for forgiveness, and sometimes disease and death that paralyze us, that lock us in, that make us wonder, can we find light in the middle of this darkness? I do want you to think about some of those. What are some of the things that do lock us in or that scare us? Are we limited by our crises? And how can we find light in that time of darkness in different ways? Anything anyone would care to add before? And then I drop back and say to myself, and sometimes I feel that way. Maybe I ought to just stop reading all these books and think about all this stuff. But, yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Right. Yeah. Oh, and I'm not saying it is.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and that's why, and maybe I'm wrong, but that's why I think things like this are important to do. And especially today, they're important to do because so many people are wanting to jettison religion, or were spiritual but not religious. It's just like I remember, and I'm trying to remember the actress now, but it's been several years ago on a late night talk show. Actually, a long time ago, Johnny Carson, in his latter years, was talking. Oh, she was well known. Anyway, he asked her, something came up, and he asked her, did she believe? Said, well, I'm spiritual. I'm real spiritual, but I really don't believe a whole lot. What? No, it wasn't Shirley MacLaine.
But
oh, I know. But what I'm trying to do, well, and I read that along with these other things because I'm trying to peel the onion, take it apart, and learn everything I can because I don't think I can ever learn enough. But I do think that we need to have more discussions and more things. I understand what you're saying about faith, and I get there, and then all of a sudden I have another question that comes up, and so I use every avenue I can to try and get there. Right. 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 Yeah. Right. Yeah. And as I have said for decades now, you don't have to agree. But you need to know, if you're going to be faithful and if you're going to make a difference in some ways, you need to know some of what else is out there so that you know what other people think and believe, and then you know why you do or don't. And I think a lot of times we do more harm, and this, once again, this is just my opinion, you can agree or disagree, but I think sometimes we in the church do more harm when our only answer is, well, I've never thought about that before, or, well, the preacher said this, or grandma thought that, and that's as far as we ever take it. Because Jesus says you should love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength.
I have a lot of people, especially in my family, like just frustrated with my wife turning all over the Lord. And that's good, but the thing is, you've got to make yourself God's implement to resolve certain problems with His guidance.
Well,
in other words, you just can't sit back.
No, well, we need the Spirit to guide us.
Yeah.
But, you know, God gave us minds with which to think. And according to the biblical writers, that's what separates us from the rest of the animal kingdom, is the ability to think and reason and relate to God with the mind as well as the heart. So,
both.
Right. Yeah. So we all approach it from different perspectives. I think we just need to find the best. Well, I don't think we're going to solve it in the next 5 minutes. I really do appreciate. No, that's. Hey, Susan, I deal with these questions a lot, but you know, I deal with them generally in other places, and I, you know, for them to, and I think, I hope that at least some of it is helpful to get the wheels turning and people to say, well, you know, hey, yeah, I've got a little more ammunition now, or I've got a little more foundation, or I don't agree with what you said, but now I know why I don't agree with it. Right. Right. Well, and that's what the man said to Jesus in the gospel. He said, I believe, help my unbelief.
And I think what we need to teach our children and young people too is that we believe in God. You know, a lot of people think for a lot of young people get turned away, but they're not in the problem, the
question.
And it's okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Right. And I think it is good for us to let them. We're still figuring it out. We're still working with it. And right.
Mm-hmm.
Progressive revelation. Progressive revelation, Susan. Yeah. I lost it then. Progressive revelation is a term that means that God gives me so much to understand. And when I finally get to the point where I understand it, I'm not done. God says, okay, now I'm going to progressively reveal a little bit more about you, my will, who I am. And when we get there, then I'm going to reveal more, which means that as long as we're alive, God is never through revealing to us. And we, if we are faithful, then we will progress in trying to understand. Now, yes. And right. Well, Paul progressed from one to another. And that's, but the flip side of that coin is progressive response. And that is, if God is going to progressively reveal more to me so that I can learn more, then I have to progressively respond in greater ways in my life. And if I'm still dealing with God today the same way that I did 5 years ago, there's a problem. And it's not with God. It's with me, because I haven't done the work to progress, not just in understanding, but to progress in my response. And that means we have to work at it. Well, a lot of folks don't like that. Now we got 2 minutes or so. She's going to stay another week so we can do no. Thank you all. I look forward to next time. God bless you. Go in peace. Amen.